Well, bad also thing happened in B place, and how dare you support A place?
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we are live at OmegaCon with our good friend Ellie Younger. We talk with Ellie about being a woman in a STEM field and about whether or not we're pushing young girls away from the arts.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick, joined as always by my co-host, Nick Glover.
Hi.
And Molly Glover.
That's me.
Ta-da!
More booze, please.
They can almost hear the jazz hands.
We are still here at the beautiful OmegaCon Studios. We still don't want to call it the Powwow Studios because that's racist.
Nope. Yeah, still racist.
But it's still the name of the room we're in. So
yeah.
Anyway, hang on, let me check. Yep, still racist. Yep.
Still racist. Okay. So, and we are joined by a fabulous guest, Ellie Younger.
Yay!
She is a good friend of ours who has moved away to Boston, but joins us every year for OmegaCon. So we're excited that we get to record with her. Before
it's like a nerd pilgrimage.
It is. It really is. And everyone that I talk to about OmegaCon on the East Coast is like, oh, that's really awesome. Do we have something like that here? And I'm like, no.
I feel like you need to develop an Omega East. I've been telling Whitney Bowlesby since she just moved to Texas. I'm like, you know, you need to form an OmegaCon down in
Texas. Omega South.
Omega South.
Omega West.
That would be
franchise
cool.
This shit.
Yeah, franchise the shit out of this thing.
So the convention that I started working for out there, Arisha, shout out to Arisha. They do a Relaxicon for their con runners, but it's all like people talking about running cons. The board game really takes a back seat. So
that's a shop talk.
Yeah, I went this year and I was like, I'm gonna show these people I'm gonna relax the shit out of this convention. It's a Relaxicon. I'm gonna like bring my A game, and I did. So
good.
Hopefully,
good.
I can.
Well, I'm glad
bring them
that,
around.
That you're moving OmegaCon. So we're not here to talk about OmegaCon East or West or South. We're here to talk about STEM education.
Yes.
So, Molly, I'm going to throw this to you to kind of frame the conversation.
I had an acquaintance on Facebook who had mentioned this, had shared this article that was, I can't find again, of course, but it was saying basically, opining, if you will, saying that... By pushing so many women, and I mean to some degree men too, but mostly by pushing so many women into STEM fields, which is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, if you don't know, are we causing there to be less funding and less attention paid to the arts and humanities and even social softer sciences like psychology and sociology and anthropology, things like that. And but it was more of a focus on, like, I think theater and acting and things like that, which are not, I don't want to say, are traditionally like things girls like, but to some degree, are we devaluing those by valuing STEM so highly?
I suppose, rather than even saying it's something that girls like, you can kind of argue, well, if you've got a bunch of guys that are going into the STEM field, and there are still guys going into these other fields, and now you get a bunch of women, hopefully more women, going into the STEM field as well, that reduces the overall pool.
Of people doing humanities. Just
right. I gotta say, for acting, that's not a bad thing at all.
No.
Because one thing I can say about acting that has been universal since I've been in theater is... all the guys that I know that are actors have a job, and all the women don't, because there are way more actresses than there are actors.
Yeah.
And and also there are way more male parts than there are.
So I think the question posed that way is saying that also by saying, look at this inequity, we need more women here. Women who have maybe chosen to go into the arts or humanities, or software sciences, it's saying that their choice is less valid than the choice to do STEM. There might be a little bit of an implication there that, you know, saying like, oh no, you're doing that, but you could be doing this instead.
Maybe even should, as opposed to could be.
Right.
How do you feel?
I obviously have strong opinions about this. I am an engineer.
Yes.
I'm an engineer by education and profession. I
do... What kind of engineer are you, Ellie?
So I work in medical devices. So my degrees are in biomedical engineering, but often I tell people I'm a mechanical engineer. Mm-hmm. Now I'm actually doing more almost chemical engineering. So, but just making medical devices, designing sure. them, building them.
Someday you will save my life because I'm a diabetic.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I have, like, you know, I could probably fill this whole podcast with horror stories about the, like, horrible sexism that I have encountered.
Oh, I don't doubt
and,
it,
like,
yeah.
And I'm not saying that, like, it's not in other fields, but I just, like, having, like, the one I'm going to throw out there is when I was in undergrad, and this was, like, early 2000s, I had a classmate of mine who went to math class and was told... when she wasn't doing well, that the professor wouldn't help her because women shouldn't be engineers.
Whoa!
So that's like nuts. This isn't
now,
this isn't
how long
some,
ago yeah, was that?
That was like
curiosity.
I graduated with my undergrad in 2002.
Okay, so it really wasn't that long ago at all.
No.
Yeah.
And my mother, who is a mathematics teacher, she told me a lot of stories about studies that were done about. And she was very, very big into encouraging girls and young women mm-hmm. to go into math. The thing, you know, like there were studies about how teachers, and I mean this is absolutely accurate. They did studies with teachers in classrooms and whether they called on boys or girls more.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't matter whether the teacher was a man or a woman. Across the board, they called on boys more, even if more girls had their hands raised,
mm-hmm.
even if they were aware. Mm-hmm. Even if they were aware that that was the bias, they still tended to call on boys more.
Well, and I were talking about this just the other day with her time being a student at St. Kate's, when mm-hmm. it's an all-girls environment.
Yeah, when I was a freshman at St. Kate's, and I
all women. Sorry.
Well, plus I'd been at a private school, college prep before that, which is a very progressive school that didn't honestly like. I mean, people you might want to say it was sheltered, but I dare say it was more that it was just almost utopic in the fact that we just didn't really have a lot of racism or sexism or homophobia. Because everyone was just kind of like, well, why would we care? Yeah. I mean,
it was also mostly like upper middle or upper class.
Yeah, yeah. It was. There definitely wasn't any like. There was definitely. We were all definitely of a homogenous class. That is for sure.
Yeah.
But so then I went from there to St. Kate's, and it's all women. And then I took a class at Augsburg for J term, and I was astonished that I was the only woman raising my hand and answering the questions. Every other woman would wait for a boy to give an answer, and then they might be like. Tentative hand, like the half hand raise. It's like, I think maybe. And then it was always like, could it maybe be that the answer might be, and then the correct answer, but it was never confident. It was always this yeah. hesitant question.
And there's, when the interesting thing about the argument that you're talking about is, I don't think that what's, and it's certainly not intentional, what's happening is there's a big push to say, we shouldn't be pushing girls out of these
yes.
fields.
And
it's not necessarily saying we should be telling girls, well, you want to go into mathematics or engineering or science because girls should go into these fields. What we're trying to say is, if this is where your aptitude lies,
mm-hmm.
we want to encourage you to do these things.
But see, here's the thing. For me, I feel like if you have any of those technical degrees as a background, it will serve you well if you want to go into something else. So if you get a... because I tell people I get a lot of people saying like, oh, my daughter wants to go, like, I want my daughter to go into engineering, really talk to her. And so, and you know, engineering, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of math and science, but really it's the process of brainwashing you into solving problems.
Mm.
Yeah.
Like,
sure.
It's brainwashing critical thinking into you so that you just instinctively approach problems in a certain way where you pick apart the problem into its like smallest constituent parts, and then you rearrange the information so it makes sense in a certain way, and then like you figure out how to solve the problem,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's like giving you those tools, those critical thinking tools, right?
Yeah.
And that will serve you anywhere. So if you want to go and be a fashion designer, you still have to learn how to calculate how much fabric you need and manage your time, and like these are all engineering problems fundamentally, right? So if you want to make like a giant sculpture, you have to figure out how much metal you're going to buy,
right.
And you know, like
if you want to be a set designer, you're going to have to figure out all the everything you need to build the set and how to build the set so it doesn't fall over.
Yep.
And yeah.
So you know, I feel like you know, it doesn't, the original argument about, oh, well, it's just pushing people out of the arts, you know, I think that's sort of saying, like, why can't STEM be an art? Like, why aren't they the same thing? And I love a lot of the stuff we're starting to see, people who are, like, kind of classically trained scientists who are going out and they're making science inspired art.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, now that I live in Boston, you know, I'm close to MIT and Harvard.
Oh, yeah.
And they have, like, Harvard has a natural history museum, and they have these beautiful flower replicas that are blown glass. They're all, like, handmade, like, but they look, honest to God, real. So, and they have, like, you, it looks like they just, like, took a flower and, like, maybe dipped it in plastic to make it slightly shiny.
Oh, that's so cool.
And, like, but, like, little, like, if you can imagine a chrysanthemum and it has, like, that really fine stamens, glass.
Oh, yeah. That sounds so
creepy. It's creepy. And then you're like, God. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, perfect idea of an intersection, you know, like, someone had to actually, like, understand enough about the plants to know what they were making, but then also the glass blowing skill to make these utterly delicate, beautiful pieces. So,
you know, so I'm in a male dominated field. I mean, just that's just straight up, especially now that I'm in game design and development, as opposed to, you know, being in the sales department. Because to be honest, when I started at Fantasy Flight, there was a handful of women, very, very small amount. And that was about 5 years ago. And now there's a lot. Almost the entire sales department, all of the accounting department, all of HR, so and a lot of marketing. But then you get, you know, there's a lot in art and graphic design. But then you get into the actual product development side, and there's only, I think, three of us. And so it's the, on that end.
Three out
and
of
that's,
how many? Just
I'm gonna say out of like 30.
Wow. Mm. So
there's
very underrepresented.
Yes. And that's, and it's not for lack of a hiring thing, but it's funny because I, you know, I'd gotten some weird sex. There's sexism stuff. Yeah. You know, the whole, I've told some stories before, but the thing that happened recently I could not believe was I was on the QA testing forums testing a game I'm making and had some beta testers, and one of them sent me a private message because my avatar is a drawing someone did of me with my hair all curly and little goat horns, and I'm holding a bouquet of flowers and I'm smiling and there's like little hearts.
It's almost
very cute.
It's almost chibi.
It's a very like Molly's perfect like vision of herself, and so it's cute, and so I put it as my thing. It's a coworker that drew it. And this guy very helpfully decided to tell me that you know, I should consider changing my avatar because it was just too cute. And he was concerned that people weren't going to be wanting to give me the harsh feedback that my games might deserve because they felt that guilty because of how cute my avatar was. And he said it made him feel so guilty when he had to say things, but he hadn't held anything back yet, but he was just really worried someone else might. So I should probably change that.
Like borderline concern troll. Like,
and,
it's not him, but he's worried other people might be.
As I'm reading this out loud, the other women are like, are you fucking kidding me? And the guys are all like, I've never had that. I can't even. And it's like, it just, and that's the kind of thing I don't think people realize that we're up against. It's those little microaggressions.
It's kind of amazing.
But
you hear these stories from every woman you talk to.
It
happens to all of them.
Yeah. Especially in male-dominated fields.
I have IT horror stories from a lot of women. Amy Stomberg and I used to work together at an ISP, Visi, and she would get people. She would be like the most senior person there.
When Heather was her boss.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, I want to talk to your manager.
I am the manager.
Yep.
Oh, well, I guess I want to just talk to someone
that
might have a different skill set. Oh, no, I know everything. I'm good. We're good, sir. Well, I guess I just want to, like, how many different ways can I not say I want to talk to someone who's
a man.
Dude?
Yeah.
Without actually saying that, they'd come up with every fucking excuse they could to get to that point. But the telecommunications, when I was at Quest, was very diverse genderly. There are a lot of women the IP knock at Quest when I was there. I want to say maybe like 40, 60, 35, 65 in that neighborhood. But there was a really common thread of ex-military or ex-armed services people there, men and women. So I mean, that might skew that really, bet, really well.
And I bet they all dealt with that same problem.
No doubt.
On my Shit That Pissed Me Off blog this week, although it won't be this week by the time this goes up. But anyway, I put up an article about this woman who, her husband had just died, and somebody told her to smile, which I think is one of the worst things you can say to any human being ever, is to walk up to them and go, smile. It's like, fuck you. You don't know how I feel.
Yeah.
You don't get to tell me whether or not to smile. It's my decision whether or not I want to smile.
Yeah.
And she did this, and she got rape threats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can say it, and I will say it. I'm going to say, don't tell people to smile. It's shitty.
Also, don't threaten to rape them.
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't threaten to rape them either. A guy can say that and not have to worry about any repercussions.
So here's a game that the listeners can play at home or work. And that is, like, the next time you are in a meeting and it's a room of, you know, mixed gender people, keep track of how many times two things happen. One, how often men speak versus women speak, like, proportionally, because women will often wait for the men to start talking, but men will just talk over each other. And so you will have this exchange where, like, guys will just, like, keep cutting each other off, and the ladies never get a word in edgewise because we're just socialized differently. So that's, like, a big one. I've actually been in meetings where there's, like, everyone in the room is an engineer, and it'll be like the uncanny case where there might even be more women than men, and the men will still do most of the talking.
Oh, wow.
And then the other one is a woman will say something, and it'll get, like, thrown out, but then a guy 5 minutes later will say the exact same thing, and then it'll be a good idea.
Yeah.
Like,
I've seen that happen.
So, just...
Yeah. Are there a lot of women in your, where you work? I mean, in your, not necessarily in your department, no. Do you see more coming in the younger, like, crowd?
Yeah, but at the same time, I feel like they, in my last job, I was in this very rare position where the project team I was on, there were five of us, and it was three women and two guys. And it was very rare. And we would actually, the ladies that I worked with, we would actually have literal conversations like, this has never happened to me. Has it happened to you? No. Like, I can't believe this is happening. You know, but we also were so incredibly productive, and our managers thankfully realized it, that they kept putting us on teams together because they realized that we collaborated better than a lot of our male counterparts. Go figure.
Synergistic effect. Yeah. Right.
Just all synced up.
Yeah.
Because that's totally a thing.
Actually, it is. I proved it with mice. STEM.
But then, like, the ladies that I see coming in, I feel like people are telling them, oh, like, no, this problem is fixed. And then they get blindsided when it's not. And so now that I'm working my way into being a manager, and my goal is to, like, my mission in life is to make it better for the people who come after me,
because
I know how much bullshit I've had to go through.
Sure,
it's a good,
goal. Right. But I still have had junior engineers come to me and be like, "This thing happened," and I'm like, "Oh my god, I'm so sorry. Let's talk about it. And when you're ready, like, we'll do the next steps, right?" But, like, it's. I feel like there definitely is a lot of these, like, young women that I'm now mentoring or managing, like, it's just sort of like, how do you gently break it to them that it's like, I'm really, really sorry, sweetie, but horrible things are going to happen to you, and, like, the best thing I can do is, like, give you a shoulder and an ear. You know?
It's going to keep happening. Wow. I mean, it's kind of depressing.
I will say,
The most that can happen is, like, an acknowledgement, a word of kindness or compassion, and then the bracing acknowledgement that it's going to keep happening.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah. How do you feel about the thought that, which has been posited in my office as well, the idea that, granted, a woman shouldn't have to change her societally earned or whatever behavior or her innate ways to fit into what is a man's world, but conversely, that's the world right now, so you should probably fit into it a little bit.
Yeah.
And so, like, I mean, to what degree is, like, because there's a big conversation I just read about people crying at work, and, like, Jill Bernard was saying, you know, if I'm going to cry, I'm going to cry. And then if like that's going to upset you and you're going to be like, oh, great, now you're crying. You know, like sometimes I just need to cry. I'm going to cry. Let it. Don't worry about it. I'm almost done. Like, and then I'll move on. And to me, I feel like crying at work, I don't care if you are male or female. It just tends to be more women than it happens to. It is bad. And maybe like remove yourself from a situation. But then it's then I've been told that's just me trying to fit into the men's world of we don't cry at work. So I don't know. Like, is there any? Do you feel like you need to teach these younger women to suck it up a bit more? Maybe like no, toughen up at all.
You know what? I don't counsel that. This is actually ties into your question before. I don't counsel that. I think that instead I wind up counseling other people to be like, look, people process things differently, regardless of their gender or their background or where they're from, where they are that day. Don't judge people on their emotions. They're having them. Like, don't be that asshole. But also, I had another thought with that.
Toughing it up or a man's world.
Yeah, so I have put myself and seek out positions where I am often in a position where I can tell bosses, or I put myself in a situation where I will just tell my boss, like, don't be that asshole. But thinking about the generational thing, a lot of the young women that I see coming in, they're like, I don't want to be a role model. I don't want to have to be on a pedestal all the time. I don't want it. Exactly. Just let me do my job. And so where like I have definitely put myself out there as being like a mentor or a, you know, these kinds of things, I'm seeing a lot of women coming in being like, can't I just be good at my job? Why isn't that good enough? Like, why do I end up being a role model. I'm that token woman.
Well, it's unfair that you have to be. Yeah. It's unfair that that has to exist. I mean, it's the same dichotomy of, do we teach women how to avoid being raped, or do we teach men not to rape?
Right. Or like, both.
We have to do both.
Yep.
We have to do both. And as much as you want to go, well, this systemic problem needs to change, and we need to work with the men in this situation to get them to change their behavior.
Foremost.
At the same time, we have to work with women in this situation to help them change their own situation and to hopefully find those that are willing to mentor
young
women.
It's just like safer behavior, but also like stop raping people.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, I mean, it's are both important and necessary, yes, but one is like a coaching prevention, and the other one is like, hello, you're raping people, and that's completely and totally fucking unacceptable. Like, it's not equal weight. They're both important.
Like, that meme I saw this thing on Tumblr. It was like, you know, if I don't want to get raped, I don't dress, you know, like a slut. The same way that if I don't want to get robbed, I don't leave my door open and all my, like, jewelry out. And then the response under that was, yeah, but I'm a human being, not a stereo or a fucking watch. Yeah. Like those are objects. You are taking objects. I'm another person.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
Also, someone walking into a house with the door open and stealing a stereo
is still fucking stealing a stereo.
But guess what? The stereo's not ruined for the rest of its life or potentially having to go to therapy and figure shit out or whatever. Yeah. Like, yeah.
So I want to actually get back to the STEM thing for a minute, because I mean, I think one thing that is fair to talk about, and the question is whether there's a causal relationship, and I'm not sure there is, as school budgets are reduced.
Mm.
Schools make decisions and to eliminate primarily the arts. They eliminate, you know, arts. They eliminate theater
stuff.
They eliminate fucking shop. They eliminate the stuff that isn't STEM. That isn't the
practical.
The quote practical stuff. But I don't know that that is a function of trying to push more girls into STEM or boys into STEM. I don't know that that's a causal relationship. I feel more like it's a, when society evaluates, just about anybody, when anybody in society evaluates this kind of stuff, they're going to place a higher value on someone being an engineer than they are on someone being a painter.
Yeah.
I mean, is that not, I'm interested in thoughts on that.
So I feel like when they do that, though, they're valuing also kind of rote teaching as opposed to things that you are... I feel like that's what they're valuing more. And
sure. Like so subjectivity,
the,
yeah.
Right. So I think the arts are actually a great place to have creative thinking and critical thinking, because, you know, art criticism and, hey, let's read this poem and mm-hmm. talk about what it means to us. Like, that's mm-hmm. great critical thinking skills, right? Like,
sure.
It is also a byproduct of being a capitalist society, mm-hmm. is that, especially with a recession and the way that the economy has been, for like the last 40 years, the goal has been, you know, you need to get a job and make money, because, you know, that's what you're going to need to do to live in our society. So, oh, my darling, I love my grandfather lost his shit when I said I was going to go into theater instead of computer engineering. Like, lost his shit. He was so upset with me. And it was just a matter, and I just was like, it's what I want to do with my life. Not, I don't want to be a computer, like, do computer science. But that was a big part of it. You're going to be broke. And he was an engineer. He's a mechanical engineer. He's like, you're going to be broke. You're not going to have any way to get a job. You know, you're not going to have any practical skills. And I do, and I have a job, and it's not, you know, so it's, but it's, yeah, I think a lot of it is capitalism, Tim, that's causing that too.
And I wonder if another part of it that I think probably does show causal relationship is the emphasis on testing. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because kids have to test to get, for their school to get funding.
Yeah.
And they're not testing kids on art.
Yeah, a little bit of English, but really the English stuff is more about
it's more comprehension.
It's almost the STEM of English, because it's the grammar and the hard rules.
It's the hard English, not mm-hmm. the arts. They don't test kids on creative writing.
No,
it's,
not yet. Well,
and, you know, I mean, I've got a handful of friends that are artists by training in, you know, higher education, like they have art degrees at the University of Minnesota and things like that, and a lot of what it ends up being, like our friend Pavel, who's a sculptor, what they taught him were skills and techniques and more objective things, so that, you know, you want to make X, here's all the skills that you need to make that thing. And he ended up picking up a lot of skills like welding and CAD and like all the things that enable him to make his artistic end product and fulfill his vision were engineering and problem solving and working with different materials and knowing the different qualities different materials have and why you work with one type of wood over another. Yeah. And that's all just engineering.
So we just need to force people into more physical mechanical arts and fewer musical theater students.
I think the problem we run into is the expectation that this stuff is unrelated.
Yeah.
You know, and we've talked, Ellie talked about that at the beginning, and that's just what you're saying now, Nick. It's all of this stuff. You need to know how to do one to do another. Yep. Music is based on math. If you're good at math, then you're likely to be better at music.
Yep.
Yeah.
And if you're good at engineering, you're likely to be a better set designer. If you're good if you understand grammar, you're likely to be a better writer.
Yeah.
All of these things.
Poet or, I mean.
Well, and like music is inherently like mathematical. I mean, there's now it's all programming, you know, electronic music. Like, you have to know the software and understand how music goes together. Another good example is like electronic music instruments, you know, like all the synthesizers and noise stuff.
Yeah. I was gonna say, I think the 80s did us a great disservice where there was such a focus on, are you left-brained or are you right-brained? Are you creative or are you practical? Because they made a very big, a lot of us grew up with this concept of you are one or the other.
Yeah.
You're either technical or artist.
And you can't change.
Yep, and there's no blend.
You're stuck that way.
There's no blend. Yeah. You're either creative or you're a numbers guy. Like, either you dream big or you can make machines. Like, it's just, there was no in between, and they made it very clear that everyone's one or the other. And boxing, I think, has hurt us in that way too.
If you go to like people who do lighting, especially people who are soundboard engineers, sound engineers, I mean, a lot of those people are basically electricians who, in their ability to because of the lack of funding for some of those professions, they have to pick up skills like how to repair amplifiers and things like mm-hmm. that, and or even build their own, because some of the analog stuff is better than some of the digital stuff, subjective. And so they end up building a lot of their own equipment, some of these folks.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Like, it's funny that there's this, it seems like there's this schism. When
and there should be a blend, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should all just use our whole brains.
Just like Whole Foods. Okay, so that is a great conversation. We have once again failed to solve the world's problems, but
sorry, everybody.
Hopefully that has generated some interesting thought with the folks listening. But it's time for five questions.
Five questions.
So Ellie seems to be ready. Molly, why don't you ask her the first question?
Question number one: what is a movie you will stop and watch anytime it's on?
So this is a little bit of a throwback, but I really love Barbarella. And I love that movie for so many reasons. I love all the costumes in it. I would love someday to just Convergence weekend, just cosplay as Barbarella all weekend and just keep changing and progress through the movie.
That would be great.
But I also love, like, I mean, she's a scientist, she's an astronaut, she's embraces her sexuality.
She's hot as shit,
Like, I mean, I love everything about it. And it's a campy movie, but it makes fun of itself. I don't know.
That's a good one.
No, that's a great one. Yeah. Nick?
Question number two, what is your geekiest or most prized possession?
Okay, so I really had to think hard about this, and I actually picked something that I'm working on now. My husband is a software engineer, and I do a lot of crafting kinds of things. I have my mm-hmm. mechanical engineering extends to my hobbies, and we are actually making homemade Pip-Boys.
What?
And,
awesome.
And he's doing the programming.
That's
and
from
then,
Fallout we just talked about last week.
Yeah. It's the ARM computer.
The ARM computer, and
super retro.
So he's doing the programming, and I'm doing the mechanical fabrication
That's
of
so
it.
Cool.
And we're going to be able to take them to conventions and upload the hotel map into them. So you can just be like, and like, you know, it'll.
Oh my God, if you guys had those on
your schedule,
you would make so much money.
So much money.
Yeah, but
so much money.
I mean, there's just going to be like hand.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
You'd be building them until you're dead.
Like, just message my husband. Beep, beep, beep.
Your panel schedule.
Exactly.
And,
Oh, I love it.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, that monochrome green.
Yeah,
super retro. Oh, that's super cool.
All right, question number three. What mythical being or deity do you wish was real?
So, the Greek oracle. So, you like, when you are like, oh my gosh, what do I do?
The oracle at
Delphi. Yeah, you could just go and be like, I'm at this crossroads in my life, and I have no fucking clue what to do with myself.
Like get high as shit and lay on the ground and be receiving a vision from the oracle. Like,
but
it was
like a real vision, not like...
Like a real vision, exactly.
Not like just some stone girl
who's not like
raped
Cheetos.
By a bunch of priests.
So much better than like a college counselor or something. You could get some real... You know, definite magical advice.
Right, exactly.
Great.
That's a good answer.
Yeah.
All right, question four. So, say religion is gone. What is the biggest problem that humanity faces?
So, I feel like this is huge, but I feel like it's greed. Like, we're just socialized to not share with others in so many ways. I feel like if we could just, I don't know, like get people, you have people who have so much, and I feel like I am included in that, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
If it was more acceptable to give of myself,
or even just like if even if it was just like you didn't feel that, I mean, that need to have,
right?
Because you feel the need to have and retain and keep as opposed to give away.
I think one of the most, to me, one of the most amazing examples of greed is why anybody would object to the estate tax.
Yeah,
because you're dead. You don't.
Yeah.
Your kids are going to get shit tons of money.
Right.
Your kids are going to get so much money, but you don't have any need for it anymore.
Yeah.
So why do you care?
Yes.
Why do you care?
I think that I totally forgot what I was going to say.
I was so
there's a lot of bullshit evolutionary psychology stuff that is like sounds really scientific and persuasive, and it's like, well, of course we're greedy. That's evolutionarily, like,
beneficial,
positive and beneficial. Like, these behaviors would have helped the like more cutthroat capitalist type personality survive.
The capitalist cavemen.
We needed to hoard the grain so we could survive winter.
Yeah. But except for all the things that pushed us past, and all the biggest breakthroughs were all social sharing, farming and
exactly.
taking care of animals.
Giving away the polio vaccine for free.
Cities and shit.
Well, and it used to be like you didn't survive the harsh winter by hoarding yourself. You shared with your neighbors.
Yes.
So I have apples and you have grain and we trade.
Yep. Like, I don't need this
and
whole
now our diets
sure.
are more. Yep. Our diets are more diverse, and if one of us would have just been wiped out by a famine, but everyone else's crops were fine. That diversity also just saved everyone's ass.
Right.
And
totally.
Evolution
so
is psychology.
Greed doesn't feel evolutionarily.
No.
It feels like it runs counter.
It's a learned behavior.
But there's
a lot of persuasive
sounding arguments that would make you think that greed is better. Because it's so
easy. You're
going to
say greed is good. It was going to be a Wall Street.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It's so quick and easy to believe, but it's... Question number five, final question. What is your favorite quote?
So I was inspired by our topic of discussion tonight. And so my quote is, "Women who seek to be equal with men lack ambition," by Timothy Leary.
That's great.
I like that one a lot. That's good.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's a great quote.
I thought it fit really well.
Yeah, absolutely. It fits well.
Awesome. So that was terrific. Ellie, we want to thank you for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We've been a long time and we finally got you.
Yes.
It's exciting.
I'm excited.
If you have any thoughts about what we've been talking about today, please go ahead and send us an email. You could send us an email all@geekswithoutgod.com, or if you want to leave some of us out of the conversation, then you could send it to Tim, Nick, or Molly at geekswithoutgod, or you could comment on our website. That's why we've got it. That's why there's a comment section.
I thought the comment section on our website was just for interesting spam.
Yeah, we do get a lot of Spanish
spam. We get a lot of interesting spam, but we'd love to get some interesting non-spam.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
So comment there. Once again, thanks for listening. Rate us on iTunes if you have a chance. We really appreciate it. And we will catch you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Whenever we talk about STEM education, I worry right-wing Christians will think we're talking about stem cells and try to ban it.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks Without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Oh, I just had my first case of being mansplained to. That was awesome.